This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your anti-static wipe of music news and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica. Every time I take a break, the game. Why do you not say so? It's a thing I often think to myself. The number one song in the country is Doja Cat and Nicki Minaj. Well, maybe by the time you're hearing this, maybe it won't be the number one, but at this moment it is. It is the remix of Say So, the all-star team up that took that record from big TikTok hit to big pop radio hit to over the top smash, Barb approved. Doja Cat is someone who has had a pretty fascinating, let's say, 6 or 7 year run with a lot of unusual twists and turns. And I was thinking about other pop stars of that generation, and most of those pop stars have fairly linear paths or very legible arcs. Doja Cat has had a lot of ups and downs. This hit is happening 6 months after her last record came out. Doja Cat has had one or two very big viral hits. She's had a couple of kind of messy viral moments. She had a moment where some of her old tweets were dug up that had offensive language, and she was kind of forced to apologize, although not without some resistance. She has been messy on Instagram Live and then embraced the mess. It is not the path that we have historically come to understand is a pop star path, but it may be how pop stars are made now. So we're going to talk on this week's podcast about the many lives of Doja Cat and the many turns that she has taken to arrive at this moment. So we're going to go all the way back to the earliest phases of her career. And joining me on this journey is going to be Laken Starling. Laken, what's good?
Hi.
Thank you for being here to talk Doja Cat with me.
I'm very happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Laken writes about music and culture, a variety of places. She did that Lil Nas X Teen Vogue story, writes for Pitchfork. That's why she's here. She reviewed the Doja record for Pitchfork, writes for The Cut, used to work at Fader back in the day. So, you know, Laken is out here covering all the ground. So I'm excited to have
you.
That's, you know, who among us, really?
Right.
We chatted a little bit yesterday, right? And we were talking kind of about the unlikely pachinko path of Doja Cat to end up at number one and how she has had kind of all these unlikely twists and turns, extremely odd angle path, very, very nonlinear, as we were saying. And you mentioned in that conversation that you've been paying attention to her from way, way back. 2014, 2015 era, SoundCloud era.
Yeah.
We've already kind of set the table that here's a person who has the number one song in the country. We'll arrive at the kind of the path and the mechanism by which that has happened. But Doja Cat has like 7 different backstories. So maybe start us off with the early to mid 2010s. When did she first end up on your radar? And in what contexts were you paying attention to her?
So I'm pretty sure I found Doja Cat on SoundCloud. I remember being like, wow, she doesn't sound like anybody else. And at the time, I was just like really into her voice and the way that she was able to like sing rap, but like do both very well. And on Purr, she's not rapping as much as she raps now, which is cool because I kind of was introduced to Doja Cat as just a singer who could kind of flex in between. Flow in between, you know, that kind of like cadence and melody thing. And she has one of those voices that kind of like an instrument anyway. So it just sounds cool. She makes a sound.
It's sort of an interesting time on SoundCloud, right? Because that 2012, 2013, 2014 period, when we talk about like SoundCloud rap or anything that's been happening, you know, 2016 onwards, it's not that. It's a very different energy. And some of that stuff from that time, it's that weird first wave of post-Toronto, kind of post-Drake, like everybody being like, okay, I'm going to tackle this problem from like a slightly different perspective. And it reminded me, like, I had not listened to Purr. This is the EP we're talking about, which came out in 2014. I had not listened to Purr prior to today. And I was really struck by the 1.0 SoundCloud-ness of it all.
It's also weird because, like, that EP could be put out today and people would like it.
Yeah.
But I think it struck me, one, because of her voice, but also because of her confidence, which I love that she's continued to just, like, evolve and make it really weird. And, like, those are just very in your face. Like, you like her or you don't. You're weirded out or you're not, but you're intrigued probably. And I guess you don't really get the weird part of her or the quirky part of her from her music per se. It's more so her online or in person, but
not in that era. In that era, right. They were separate.
It was just totally like this, I don't know, like sexy, but very confident voice that I just wanted to hear more. I think Purr is what, 5 songs? But then after Purr, it was like, where's Doja Cat? Where's that girl that I really like from SoundCloud?
We should actually play So High, which is kind of the first record that really got attention. So let's hear a little bit of So High, which came out earlier than the EP, but then got put on the EP. So this is Doja Cat circa 2012, 2013, So High.
Love So High, another one. It's actually the first track on Purr EP. Beautiful. It gives me the same feels as tracks like, as a track Better Than Me, which is on Hot Pink, her latest album. It's just like this very like tender, like Doja gives you like pink fluff. You think of like this like pink oasis, like this bedroom that's like lit with like a mood light. Like that's what I think of when I think of her. Probably because like, that's where she's been like many times, but specifically that song gives me the same like really delicate, airy, but confident feels as a song like Better Than Me. And it just has the same like vibe of like, I'm beautiful, I'm confident, you know, it doesn't really get much better than me. And so Beautiful is like probably like a understated gem on Purr that I really think is really cool because she's still in that same pocket now. It's just evolved.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned like if this EP was dropped today, people would really gravitate towards it. And I think that's right, because there is so much of the texture of the R&B that was kind of like coagulating on SoundCloud at that time has ended up becoming the breakthrough R&B sound of the last 2 years, especially. Doja Cat herself, I don't think post Say So could do this exact record, but like a hypothetical anonymous person putting this out, maybe all of a sudden would get signed to a real record. You know, like it's that sound is that precise. That early Doja Cat stuff, like you say, it's part of what she brings now, but it's only one component of what she brings now. After this EP comes out, or maybe just before the EP comes out, she signed a real deal. She signed with Kemosabe, which is an RCA imprint. That's the Dr. Luke imprint. We will get back to the Dr. Luke question. yeah. We will re-arrive at that. Although I should say I did some date checks. Mm-hmm. The EP came out, I believe, in August of 2014. The first Kesha lawsuit is, I believe, in October of 2014. Now, that's not to say that people didn't know things or weren't aware that things were in the cooker. However, I believe that Doja signed with Luke late 2013, early 2014. So it's possible that at the time of her signing, she was unaware that that was like on the horizon, that it was kind of happening behind the scenes. That's possible. We don't know. We shall come back to it because it's been an interesting day or two on Twitter because of this. Okay, so then Doja drops that EP, has a perspective, and I will say, as I was going through her Spotify page, there was something very, very interesting that I have often thought about when I try to assess or I try to imagine like how the musicians of the future, the pop stars of the future, are going to release music. And I realize what they're going to do is it's going to be like, here's an album. Here's a two song thing. Oh, here's a single. Oh, here's a random remix. Oh, here's like a sort of odd, like what Drake did, like an odds and ends collection that kind of gathers up a bunch of nonsense. Oh, and here's a four song thing. There's some of that energy in the longitudinal look at Doja Cat. And I was like, oh, this is actually very modern in as far as release approach, although maybe as a kind of way to concentrate energy around her may be a little challenging because you're kind of just drip, drip, dripping out over a couple of years.
Yeah, and it's been like quite a while. Like, I mean, what's that, like 6 years? Was it 2014? And between then and I think she was on a featured track in like 2017, but there really wasn't like a Doja Cat single until 2018. So that was on streaming at least.
We should touch on something we talked about yesterday briefly, which is and you mentioned just a second ago, the kind of extra musical stuff, right? Because she has this very, how can we put it, robust personality. She's extremely present and engaged in the internet space. Tell us about the Doja Cat that's not the musical Doja Cat. Tell us about the internet personality Doja Cat.
I remember, I guess it would have been on Twitter. Yeah, Twitter. And it would just be like random times of like late nights where I'd be like, oh, like Doja Cat's on Periscope. And I really never watched anyone else's Periscope. But for some reason, like she would always be like in her room, pink mood light, just like, you know, playfully just like chatting with peak fans that were on Periscope and kind of being like just her very authentic self that can be a little bit like snarky and like dry humor, sarcasm. And I would be like, well, what is she doing? Is she making beats? And I think sometimes she would be like making music, but she really has been like, she really has always known the value, I think, of tapping in, like, but it's not always just being about the music. It's about like, hey, if you rock with me, like you'll rock with me while I'm like in my room being idle. Just how now she's like, if you rock with me, you'll rock with my crazy gross sense of humor sometimes,
right? Or my peak messiness. Yes.
Yeah, like all of it. So I think I've always remembered that. And like, I think that's part of what's made her stick in my head all this time is because I just wanted to know like more about her. Like, who is she?
We should probably step back slightly to understand what the mid 2010s were like for everybody who doesn't remember what the mid 2010s were like.
Right, because Instagram was not as evolved.
Not a thing, right? Not a thing, but not certainly like, you know, 1/10 of what is.
The videos were like, what, 15 or like 30 seconds? Like,
who even remembers?
Exactly. Like, there's really no way on Instagram in the same capacity that she would have. Because there wasn't any live, so you had Periscope.
The thing that was interesting about that time is it's really like the first era where you're post-Twitter, you're early Instagram, so you're image-friendly, but video is starting to become more of a thing. It's 2020, it's quarantine. Every time I open Instagram, it's like 15 people on live doing something. Like, and I'm just one man. I can't watch 15 lives at the same time.
I swipe till I see a friend, a familiar face.
Oh, that's generous. That's more generous than me, I'll tell you that. But you know what I mean? Like, I just can't do it. But at that time, it was still kind of like, huh, there is going to be a young generation of artists that is going to put themselves out there in these new formats and start to form identities around this presentation. They're not going to wait to put a YouTube video out. IG video is not really a thing at the level it is now. So they're going to use these live broadcast formats to kind of invent their personalities on the fly. And from what you were telling me, Doja Cat was like one of those people who was like, oh, I could do this.
And she was really young at that time. I think she's 24, born in 95. So she was probably still a teenager. So that's even more interesting.
You know, sometimes we forget that these people are young. I try to be more generous with young people, generally speaking. So, okay. So she's inventing herself. She's loose. She's kind of a little wacky, a little eccentric. She's playful. She's maybe a little bit bawdy, a little bit randy.
But still like very distant, like still like where in the world is Doja Cat? And, you know?
And so, like you say, but from a musical perspective, so she's cultivating this personality online. But from the musical perspective, 2015, 16, 17 is relatively dry. And this is another interesting, like we talk about the kind of erratic, irregular path that she takes from anonymity to the number one spot on the Hot 100. It's weird that she had a moment, got signed, and then basically disappears while still being on one of the biggest labels in the country. That's strange in and of itself.
Yeah. I don't think anyone even knew, like, I didn't even know that she was signed under RCA Imprint, period, until I think the 2018 album. I think when I was like, okay, wow, like she's put out this really long project. And I, of course, spoke to the bottom and I'm like, okay, RCA. So that was when I thought maybe she had gotten signed on the hush.
See, everybody wants to talk about industry plants, which is like not a real thing. But what is a real thing is secret signed. That's a real thing. Everybody out here writing about industry plants, nope. Secret sign, though. Ooh.
Right. And I think we find out about it more and more now because the idea of being signed to a major label has changed and changed again and being independent. And so it's like now it's kept a secret for different reasons. But I do wonder, like, you know, I don't know the facts about that interim time between 2014, 15 and her first full-length album, but it's interesting.
And the interesting thing about that album, and it's true of the second album too, but the interesting thing is there actually weirdly is a long rollout. There's like four singles on this record, which is not something that ordinarily happens with non-superstar. You know, like you would think Drake gets four singles, Rihanna gets four singles. Like that makes sense. But like Doja Cat gets four singles.
Because then there was a re-release of that album in 2019 that has like
with the extra stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Grow With Us, Juicy. There's Tia Tamara, Moo. So like, I think once Moo hit, it was like, okay, we need to amp this up and reintroduce you in another way.
Before we get to Moo, which is vital, a vital American record of the late 2010s, let's just play a little bit of Roll With Us, which I believe was the first, maybe the second, first or second actual single from that first album, which is Amala, I believe. So here's Roll With Us. Baby, you can roll. Let's get into Moo, which is, of course, the turning point. It's the breakout moment. I remember this day on Twitter pretty intensely, right? And it's interesting because it's a very visual, imagistic record. But I also love how it functions as just wordplay. And I remember Twitter being very, very, like, loud and rowdy and, like, lol-worthy that day. One of the reasons that Moo is interesting is it kind of like sandpapers out some of the production stuff that's happening on other Doja Cat records and really dials in on her unusual eccentricities as a vocalist and as a kind of songwriter, as a lyricist. I don't know. It feels like a weird concept record. Although if you play it from front to back, you know, you get to the end and you're like, nah, this is like basically just a regular song with like a kind of deadpan funny hook. But when you can start distilling songs down to their funniest 10 or 20 seconds, which is something that's happening in this era because of Instagram, if you're distilling songs down, it's really, really like it's very funny at 20 seconds. At 2 minutes, it's like pretty funny. But at 20 seconds, it's hilarious.
Yeah, I think that I was really excited when Moo came out because I just was like, oh, that's the girl I remember. But like, she's obviously older now. And like, she's, you know, things have changed. But it was just that like her level of creativity was just so refreshing. I don't really remember what was happening in the world at the time. But I do remember Moo being something that like everyone felt like we needed in a way. Like I remember doing a friend's radio show and putting it into my set and like everyone, it was like a live radio show and everyone was like, went crazy. And even if they didn't know the words, it's like, it's just a really contagious song with the energy that is so fun. And like you said, it's hilarious. And like, really, when do we get like funny music? Like that doesn't really happen anymore, especially when it comes to like rap. I think there used to be a time where like you have artists like Busta Rhymes or like Missy, where you get something really weird and kind of quirky and it's kind of funny, or just like, you're like, what did she say? Or what did he say? You know, what word was that? I feel like that mood is like that. Like it's, you're like, it's just the metaphors, the outfit and the video. It's just a lot to, it's so much you can like pick out and be like, I like that line. Or like, I love that outfit.
The visual shorthand was like incredibly effective. And the song, like you say, it's funny. It's deadpan. There's a certain level of like insouciance that we associate, I think, with people who are like on the internet, just in general. There's a little bit of an eye roll. There's a little bit of a, you know, and it had, this song has some of that baked into it. It's not like straight, like slapstick funny. It's a little bit like deep sigh slapstick funny. And that feels very internet to me, very of that moment. Well, we've talked about it enough. Everybody get your cow print pants out, because this is Moo, which is M with three O's and an exclamation point. Let's get into it.
I'm a cow. I'm a cow. I'm not a cat. I don't say meow. I'm a cow. I'm a cow. I'm a cow. I'm a cow. Go moo.
Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece, and in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
Hi, this is Eric Kim with New York Times Cooking. As a recipe developer, I spend a lot of my time trying to come up with dishes that are quick, easy, but also very special. For me, that means dishes like gochugaru salmon. It's a crispy salmon fillet with a salty, sweet glaze that bubbles up and candies. I love cooking this because it only takes 20 minutes. I developed this recipe when I was down in Georgia with my family. It stars a Korean red pepper powder called gochugaru. I love the way it blooms in the maple syrup and the rice vinegar. If you don't have gochugaru, you should totally get some. It's super versatile. It's not just that it brings heat, but fruity sweetness as well. You can get this recipe and so many more ideas on New York Times Cooking. Visit nytcooking.com to get inspired.
So that's a hard pivot. And then the next hard pivot is like 12 hours around the corner, which is, of course, in the immediate wake of her intense virality, some old tweets, or maybe one old tweet, I don't remember if it was one or more, emerge, in which she said an unkind thing using language that, you know, none of us should use. And when pressed on it, she did a classic 1.0 internet mistake, which is she doubled down and redid the thing that she got critiqued for. That all happened, I feel like, within 24 to 48 hours of the viral break. As someone who was watching at a time, like, it was like the milkshake duck phenomenon. It was like, milkshake duck is amazing. We regret to inform you milkshake duck is racist, like all within, you know, 2 hours. So this is like a real good emblematic thing of that. What are your recollections of that moment in her career?
I do remember her kind of just like not being apologetic at all. And I remember the internet being confused. I feel like from what I saw, people were disappointed, but also just like confused, because that kind of reaction is to doing something wrong. It's also just bizarre. It's like, what? Like, does she really mean that? Like, is that really how she feels? Because if so, that's crazy. Also just like disappointed, because everybody was just rooting for her. days before. So I remember it being like a shocker, but also her reaction was just like, what do you even do with somebody who's that blatantly like, nope, like said what I said.
I'm generally in favor of like people doing their own spin control, you know, like a people kind of being like, I'm going to talk to you about this, as opposed to like my representative says, you know, or like some publicist writing a statement that she just like notes apps and puts on her and on her Twitter. You know what I mean? Like, I'm generally in favor of the direct engagement approach, but that was just like a startling thing where you're like, oh, yeah, no, don't do that. Nah.
Yeah, it was like, yeah. Oh, no, baby, what is you doing?
Ooh, yeah, baby. No.
Like, don't do
girl,
that.
Baby, ooh, yeah, just like real wincy, like, no. Oh. So she did eventually apologize. I remember as one of the, I don't know if it was one of the first, but it was a pretty high profile moment where you're like, oh, you just like accumulated 1,000 goodwill points yesterday, and now you're 5,000 goodwill points in the hole tomorrow. I remember thinking like that's how fast and how intense the reaction was at that time. And then that sort of begs the next question, which is, well, is that a wrap?
I didn't feel that that was going to happen.
Oh, interesting. Why not?
I think because I saw people feeling conflicted. Like I saw a lot of people just like, dang, like, you know, we really liked her. Like, maybe she'll come back around. Or like, I think it was just on such a high that people just, they just seem more confused than they usually are when somebody does something horrible. Or just more like waiting to see if she would actually come back around and fix it. Like, you know, I didn't feel like it was like the end per se for her. But I did feel like she was going to have to answer to it later again.
This is where when you have a weirdly like a long digital footprint, and as you point out before, like she does have kind of a long digital footprint in a perverse way. Just for the record, I am not endorsing this approach. However, I do want to say if you have a long digital footprint and you could say, I've always been a little messy, like I was a little messy in 2014. I was a little messy in 2015. I was a little like if you can point that out. You can maybe plausibly argue, and again, I do not endorse this, but you can maybe plausibly argue, okay, this thing that I'm getting flack for is maybe like two clicks worse than what I did last year. But you have to understand, like, I've been loose for a long time and I overstepped boundaries.
Yeah, like you have to take some accountability, even if you are a loose cannon, like, and especially because I feel like she's an artist with such a diverse fan base of people who are of all different kind of identities. And that's one of the things that's really special about her. So it's like, you can't just let people down like that. Like you have to answer. I mean, you don't have to, but if you want to be
taken seriously and like allowed back in the, yeah, of course. I mean, and again, just to tie up the previous thing, just don't be messy online. Like broadly speaking, don't be messy online and you won't have to deal with the problem like Doja Cat did. In the moment, it felt like a major mountain, but in the rear view, it feels like more like a micro blip, right? Within a few months, she was sort of like back to putting out songs. And I remember that I felt like there was kind of like a slow sort of a, okay, like, hey, are we listening to Doja Cat right now? We doing that? Or are we off this? Like, I can't like, and then like by the, you know, 6 to 12 months later, it's kind of like, no, we're good. Like everything's fine.
I would literally see tweets like, is she still canceled? Like, you know, like not like kind of like comical, like we still have like, you know, of people who are of communities where that would absolutely, you know what I mean, be something super offensive. So it's like, it's kind of that dilemma that, you know, I think a lot of us, especially people of marginalized communities face, women, Black women, queer people. It's like, we are often the targets of somebody's problematic comment or rant. So it's like, you have to sometimes make this stupid decision to just be like, oh, I really like this song. And it's just like, you know, of course there's like boundaries and different thresholds, but like, I feel like there has been this sort of like space for grace. Just like, okay, like don't do that again. You know what I mean? Like, because I don't know, the whole cancel culture thing really isn't good. I think it's counterproductive, but there is a way to hold somebody accountable. But there also sometimes it's to be like, okay, I like you, but I didn't forget that you did this thing. And how are you going to answer to that?
Obviously, it's within everyone's power to both acknowledge that people are fallible and also to say, I will not allow that level of mistake. Like, you know, each individual's got to draw a line somewhere in that sand. She did come out and apologize and deleted not just those tweets, but I think all tweets.
Right.
You know, screen grabs live forever, of course.
They do.
Do you feel like she's been fully restored?
I think so. Not to say that people have forgotten either, but I think that, yeah, she apologized. She hasn't said anything like that ever again or done anything similar in that way. Like, of course, she's like sarcastic and a little messy, but like it hasn't been anything, you know, offensive in that way. I think also maybe something that's, I don't know, she works really hard. Like, I think that she's maybe proven herself as an artist too, like since Moo, because that was really her introduction to for a lot of people. So I think that she's just buckled down on being herself and working on her music. And it seems like everyone really like loves what she's bringing to the space, the music space and rap especially. So, I mean, you know, I'm sure there are some people, and rightfully so, who are like, nope, didn't like that, like not gonna engage. But for what it seems like, the larger audience seems to be like, okay, girl, that was a mess. I think she's very likable, like even though she's not like a likable in the sense of being perfect or harmless per se, but her personality is just very contagious. And like, you either like her or you're like, you don't, kind of.
So the interesting thing that happens post Moo is she gets really popping. So basically almost every record that comes out after Moo kind of goes.
Yeah, I think it was Tia Tamara after Moo, right?
Actually, we should play Tia Tamara, which also has Rico Nasty on it.
Hair go long like Chia, money go long like Nia. I am the big idea, my twin's big like Tia. My twin's big like Tia Tamara.
So there's Tia Tamara, there's Juicy, then there's like a Juicy remix with Tyga. It's the rule that if you are at this stage in your career, you have to have Tyga on a remix. It's like,
that's
actually
a whole other podcast. And the Tyga features always make the song slap. I'm always confused. I'm just like, this is so weird.
I got over whatever like residual anxiety I had about like early Tyga.
Have anxiety about it. I'm always like, featuring Tyga.
In the year of our Lord 2020, I accept Tyga into my heart. I really do. And so all these songs kind of go, and then they do a deluxe version, which is like this thing that labels do to make it seem like albums really were hits and successful, but they do it 6 months later. They add the hits on the end so that they can capture all the streaming numbers and apply them to an album that is not popping. So even though there's good stuff on Amala as an album, it was not hitting. But if you look at the Amala Deluxe version at the end, you're like, huh, that's weird. All the bangers are right there at the end.
Yeah, all these songs slap right here at the end.
They should be number 1, 2, and 3. What are you talking about? Anyway, shout out to our friends at RCA. And so she's moving at this point. And then there's another album that comes out. That album is called Hot Pink. Talk to me about this record. How does it differ from the first album and obviously the first EP?
I really was just really proud of her, because I remember when the 2018 album came out and I was like, okay, like she's, you know, she's still finding her sound, even though I thought that she had a sound, you know, that was already pretty cool. But I'm like, she obviously is an artist that can do a lot. So like, maybe she's trying to find her, you know, find her groove. But I really feel like even though Hot Pink is like a million different grooves, they're all really cohesive. And it's like, I don't know. It was just like refreshing, because it's like a lot of times, you know, you have a new artist, they put out their, not that this is her first full length, but it was the first one when she had achieved this like level of fame. So it's like, you get the album and you're disappointed because you're like, oh, it sounds really overproduced. It just sounds like this was like very packaged. And I think hers sounded, she was able to keep that highly produced sound and still have her own individuality, like, just burst all through the album. Like, it didn't feel so pop that I was like, who is she? You know, it was like everything. So that was also really refreshing, because I feel like that doesn't really happen a lot. Like, you can kind of count on your favorite new artist's first big album to kind of sound not all the way as maybe raw or authentic, maybe in some ways, as you would have liked. So yeah, I think she just did like a really good job at blending a lot and making it sound like it belonged.
The record that ends up really blowing for her, and obviously we'll get to Say So in a second, but that record is not like the records that I think are great on Amala, and they're not like the records that I think are great on Purr. So she has like this very natural flexibility, and it's very effective, I think, you know, paired with a producer who has a crisp vision of what to do with that. All of a sudden you're kind of arrive at a very robust song by people who understand how to, you know, work in tandem. Now, Say So, it's a Dr. Luke record. It's like kind of unmistakably a Dr. Luke record. And Dr. Luke, obviously, Kesha had accused him of sexual improprieties. And there have been back and forth legal challenges and lawsuits. And it's been, we're not going to get into the depths of it. What this does, though, is it creates the cloak of a problem for Doja Cat and also for other artists. This happened with Kim Petras, who I wrote about last year. Similar issue. Where Doja Cat has this breakthrough moment, has a number one song thanks to the Nicki Minaj remix, and then the day two story is Dr. Luke is back on top. Watching that happen, obviously there are things that we can't know about the Dr. Luke and Kesha situation. We know that there are still open questions and unresolved legal situations, so we can't speculate on those things, but we do know what the public energy is around Dr. Luke. To what degree do you think that casts a shadow over what Doja Cat is doing? And to what degree do you think she's obliged to talk about it?
I think for people who are aware of Dr. Luke and all of what Kesha went through, like really were present at that time, definitely feel weird about it. But then it's also, like you said, like we don't really know the situation of like when she was signed or you know how these songs came to be. So it's like, you don't want to take anything away from Doja because we haven't heard her say anything about that partnership or him co-writing or having credits. But I do think that it is something that she should address, like not even to necessarily defend herself, but I think it's a complicated thing that's worth talking about. Even if she, you know, was unapologetic about it, not saying that she would be, but let's just, it's an important truth to talk about because she is at this point where she's a big pop star now. And like, we know stuff gets tricky. And also for women, it really does suck that a lot of times, like the option for your success may be that you have to navigate or work with men who do really terrible things in a very male dominated industry. But it doesn't feel good to me to see him back at a number one.
So Say So, it goes. It's a big record. It's sort of undeniable. It was sort of an effective TikTok record. And then it became a standalone kind of radio record. What do you think about the Nicki version? Because obviously the Nicki version is what takes it to number one. All the barbs came out.
They missed Nicki anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Just a quick sidebar. You know, Nicki did a record with Megan, right? And it kind of didn't do what I think people thought that pairing was going to do.
Yeah.
It didn't have that power.
I like that they linked up because I think this is what the conversation has been like and was around Nicki for so long. Like, you know, we want to see you embrace these like younger girls, younger women in rap, and we want to see you just have fun with them and like be a big sis, you know? And so I think that it was a really good pairing because both of them do pop really well. And they both have these very massive presence on any record. And so like, I thought it was a perfect pairing. I read that Doja, you know, her fans were like, obviously like, we want Nicki on, you know, on the song. And so she was really excited when she found out that Nicki got on it. Like, I think it was nice, like, especially for Nicki fans.
I thought it was a nice, like, you know, aw moment, because I think we've been wanting that. Like, we want to see there's this new, like, this new generation of women in rap. There's so many of them versus time when Nicki was like fighting through the trenches to be a pioneer, to pave the way for a lot of people, whether they want to give her the credit or not. So it was nice to see them have that.
And you also, you pointed out something which I think is very right. You know, Nicki's relationship to pop is obviously, I don't know if it's a problematic through line, but it's been a conversation point at various stages of her career, right? Dating back to the Rosenberg Summer Jam thing. Like, it's always kind of been there. What that conversation or that kind of narrative obscures is that Nicki is a great pop rapper. She's a great rapper. She's a great technical rapper, but she's also a great pop rapper. She's great at character. She's great at using space and melody. Like, those are things that she's incredibly gifted at. And even when you hear Doja Cat rapping, you hear some of Nicki in Doja, clearly. Like, that's there. So when you hear them doing it side by side, you're like, oh, this makes all the sense in the world.
Even aesthetic wise, it's like, not to take anything away from Doja, but just like, just meaning it's very much so in sync. Like, it's very cohesive in the ways that they like present themselves sometimes. And like, I think it's the Rules video. Or no, it's Cyber Sex. I'm like, oh, this reminds me of Nicki, but not in a way of like, she stole this. I mean that in like a compliment.
Yeah. Be careful, Lakin. Be careful.
Yeah, it reminded me of Nicki in a very nice, wistful way.
Yes. Do not at Lakin.
Please do not harass me saying that do I said not, that somebody stole something from somebody else.
Do not at Lakin. That's my request for this set. This, please do not. This is, it's possible to practice responsible criticism and not get at it. So we appreciate the support of everybody listening to not at Lakin. Okay, as we go out, point us to a great Doja record that we're not up on. And maybe it's from Purr, you know, like something that is not part of the narrative that we have told, which is already a very strange and erratic narrative that has a lot of stops.
Let's do Beautiful from Purr.
Okay, yeah, which you touched on previously, but we didn't listen to. Beautiful, Doja Cat, Lakin, thank you. Do not at Lakin.
Thank you.
That's our Doja Cat conversation, which means you know what time it is. It's JC Cribs time. Let me get a smoking jacket on. Let me pivot the Aeron chair. Let me spin around and see what we're going to get into today. To be honest, the first thing I'm laying my eyes on, which we're not going to get into, but I'm laying my eyes on this Sam Hunt 7-inch Urban Outfitters exclusive. I don't know what you know about that, but I promise you don't know enough about that. So let's just leave that. Go check that out. And also check out the My Truck remix with Sam Hunt. My boy is floating on that. But here's where we're going to go today. I worked at Vibe from 2006 to 2008. I want to shout out Danielle Smith, the editor-in-chief at that time, who hired me to be the music editor. The mid-2000s, as you may remember, you know, we've just spent an hour talking about the sort of various viral paths of the 2010s, but virality did not get invented in the 2010s. Let's talk about the mid-2000s. Let's talk about early internet-friendly rap, which is to say, let's talk about Soulja Boy. Oh, yes. Let's talk about Soulja Boy. So you may remember there was a time before Soulja Boy was a reality television star, before he was a Drake meme creator, before he was a phone entrepreneur or a headphone entrepreneur or a earbud entrepreneur. There was time before all of that. When Soulja Boy first came out, the sound of Crank That Soulja Boy was so sharp and so radical and so kind of infectiously punishing, or punishingly infectious, maybe both. And one of the things that Soulja Boy had at that time, I'm pretty sure it's in the video for that song, is he has these white sunglasses with Soulja Boy painted on them, I guess in whiteout. Maybe it's white marker or maybe it's whiteout. And I was working at Vibe and we were trying to figure out how to cover Soulja Boy. I don't think we were interviewing him, but I think we realized like the path that he had taken to his level of success at that point was not a path we had seen at all at any other time. And so we did this sort of like a timeline slash flowchart of all the steps that Soulja Boy had taken that were kind of unconventional. And I remember we would talk to his publicist and we were trying to get some details. And maybe that was for one issue, and perhaps for a later issue, maybe it was the year-end issue. We were trying to wrap up the year in music. And I'm embarrassed to say, I don't remember if this was 06 or 07. So just bear with me. We were trying to wrap up the year in music. And I remember that was the year that Kanye really spazzed with the Venetian blinds sunglasses. And I was like, huh, Kanye sunglasses, Soulja Boy sunglasses. That's hip hop right now. Old guard, new guard, old fashion, new fashion, high fashion, up from the ground fashion. And I was like, you know what? I want to do a photo shoot. Just those two sunglasses. No people, just the sunglasses. This is the thing you used to do in magazines. I don't know if anybody out here on the internet is doing photo shoots of competing sunglasses. But anyway, that's where I was at. We had a hard time, I remember at the time, calling in the Kanye glasses, because obviously we couldn't get his actual glasses and they had not really started mass producing them as promo items. So I think our fashion director at the time, I remember, I believe it was Rajni, hello Rajni, called a version of them in from some vintage sunglass dealer. So we had a version of the Kanye glasses. And I called Soulja Boy's publicist and I was like, we want to shoot the glasses. And he's like, you want to shoot the glasses? And I was like, yeah. I was like, well, here's the thing. They have to say Soulja Boy on them. And they have to say Soulja Boy on them exactly as he has them. And he was like, okay. And maybe a few days later, I get a package and I open the package and they are sunglasses with Soulja Boy written on them, presumably in whiteout. And I called him and I was like, I was in my peak fact-checking energy. And I was like, I need to know, did Soulja Boy himself write Soulja Boy on these glasses? And the guy said, yes, that is Soulja Boy's handwriting. And so we did the photo shoot. It's a fire spread somewhere on the Vibe Google Books. It's in there somewhere. The Kanye glasses went back to the vintage sunglass dealer and the Soulja Boy glasses rest in my office. That is our show. Thank you to Lakin for coming through. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email me your favorite Soulja Boy viral moments. There are plenty. Good listicle in there. If anybody's into listicles these days, drop me a line, get in the Facebook group, talk about Soulja Boy in there, talk about Doja Cat in there, subscribe to podcasts anywhere you get your audio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, etc., etc. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Head Separate Media. And as we take you out, like that boy Chalamet, crank that Soulja Boy. Why me crank that Soulja Boy to Superman? Now why me you crank that song? 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 Now why?